Welcome to a special episode of the Minyan. We are celebrating Purim. For those who listened to our main feed episode, you heard some of the context of that. Today, Talia and I are going to do something a little bit different. We're actually going to read the text that is the basis of the Purim story, Megillat Esther, the Book of Esther. And yeah, we're just going to kind of like bounce back and forth, reading a chapter a piece and reacting to it. It's a like kind of silly, fun story, but with some like weird bits in it that I don't know, maybe we'll speak to. But yeah, we're going to kind of just see how this goes and hopefully you enjoy it. Before we get started, Talia, what are you drinking?
I am drinking Schlafly Boomerang Lemon Lime Mead Spritzer, and I am wearing a creator shirt.
Yeah.
Satan is real. I am not wearing my wrestling stuff. Damn. Although shout out to all the people who like wrestling. And just like my work pants and shit.
Wait, which creator shirt is it? I love Creator.
Satan is real.
Nice.
Yeah.
I fucking love Creator.
I do too.
Yeah, one of the greats. And I am just drinking tea because I've had a really fucking long week and I'm going to fall asleep if I drink more than one of my usual Narragansetts. But I did drink a Narragansett a little bit ago. I'm wearing the same thing I wore to work, but because it's Friday and because I'm a dork, I wore a Siege long sleeve because it's a vocab word. So it's a band shirt that's also a vocab word. And now all my kids remember what Siege is, and helpfully it's a Siege long sleeve that says break down the walls down the sleeve. So it's like literally it's like, I mean, Walls is one of their best songs, but also it defines the word. So it's great. It's perfect.
It sounds like the Jericho's theme song.
Wait, have you listened to Siege?
I have not, but I'm thinking of Jericho's Break the Walls.
Oh God. So, okay. So Siege,
it's the wall of Jericho.
Siege is like an old ass, like Boston hardcore band, but they're like the godfathers of grind. Basically they just played like super fast bonkers thrashy hardcore in like 81 or 82. And they're one of my favorites. They're great. Well, now the outro is going to be Siege. Great. Excellent. Perfect. Great excuse for that.
Satan is real.
I'll do both. Hell okay, yes. Cool. Excellent.
Awesome.
Excellent. All right. So let's get into this thing. We had talked originally about I'll take chapter one. So I'll do odds. You do evens.
Sounds good, and we're going to have some sweet-ass noisemakers.
Yes, we are. This is going to be, as promised in the main feed episode, the DMX edition of Megillat Esther.
It's the DMX feel.
Yep. There's going to be a lot of glass breaking and dogs barking whenever we say a certain someone's name. All right.
Do you still want me to like boo him?
Yeah, definitely still boo. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. All right. So here we go. Chapter one. It happened in the days of Ahasuerus, that Ahasuerus who reigned over 120 provinces from India to Ethiopia. In those days, when King Ahasuerus occupied the royal throne in the fortress Shushan, in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all the officials and courtiers, the administration of Persia and Media, the nobles and the governors of the provinces in his service. For no fewer than 180 days, he displayed the vast riches of his kingdom and the splendid glory of his majesty. And this is how you know this is fiction, because like, holy shit, 180 days? No way. Not possible. At the end of this period, the king gave a banquet for 7 days in the court of the king's palace garden for all the people who lived in the fortress Shushan, high and low alike. That's nice.
Mm-hmm.
There were hangings of white cotton and blue wool caught up by cords of fine linen and purple wool to silver rods and alabaster columns. And there were couches of gold and silver on a pavement of marble, alabaster, mother and pearl, and mosaics. I hope they mean gold and silver thread because I'm Those would be pretty uncomfy couches.
Yeah.
Royal wine was served in abundance, as befits a king, in golden beakers, beakers of varied designs. And the rule for the drinking was no restrictions for the king. For the king had given orders to every palace steward to comply with each man's wishes. In addition, Queen Vashti gave a banquet for women in the royal palace of King Ahasuerus.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, Vashti rules.
No boys allowed. That's the way it should be.
Yeah, right? I will go into voluntary exile. On the seventh day, when the king was merry with wine, he ordered Mehuman, Bizetha, Harbona, Bigtha, Abagtha, Zethar, and Karkas, the seven eunuchs.
Are you sure that's not carcass?
We're adding in a carcass song to the music now.
Good. I love that.
The seven eunuchs in attendance on King Ahasuerus to bring Vashti before the king, wearing a royal diadem to display her beauty, wink, wink, to the peoples and the officials, for she was a beautiful woman. But Queen Vashti refused to come at the king's command, conveyed by the eunuchs. The king was greatly incensed, and his fury burned within him. But, like, fuck you, man. No.
Yeah.
Eat shit. Then the king consulted the sages learned in procedure, for it was the royal practice to turn to all who were versed in law and precedent. His closest advisors were, oh god, here we go. Karsh, more lists of names.
You're good at this. I cannot say these words.
I mean, God knows if I'm saying them right. Shit.
You have the authority sounding voice.
That's the trick. You just,
Jesus, I can't talk.
Yeah, you just sound like you know what you're talking about.
I think that comes with being a teacher.
It does. You got to fake it till you make it. Also, just I have figured out that as a general rule of thumb, if I follow the like romance language vowel pronunciation, I'm like 80% right. So <Yeah. laughs> that's the trick I've learned when pronouncing names I don't know. Although my Chinese students just shake their head at me whenever I try to pronounce any Chinese emperor name. I'm like, I'm sorry, I can't. I'm sorry. They just judge me really hard. But that's okay. I deserve it. All right. So his closest advisors were Karshena, Shethar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, Marsena, and Memucan, the seven ministers of Persia and Media who had access to the royal presence and occupied the first place in the kingdom. What, he asked, shall be done according to law to Queen Vashti for failing to obey the command of King Ahasuerus conveyed by the eunuchs? Thereupon, Memucan declared in the presence of the king and the ministers. I love how they blame it on this minister, like as if it wasn't the king's idea. Like, fuck you, man.
Yeah.
Come on, you're going to just like, oh, yeah, no, my advisor told me to do it. Not my idea. Queen Vashti has committed an offense not only against your majesty, but also against all the officials and against all the peoples in all the provinces of King Ahasuerus. Okay. Oh, God, here we go.
Whoa.
Brace yourselves. Brace yourselves, listener. This is about to get like real fucking misogynistic.
Mm-hmm.
For the queen's behavior will make all wives despise their husbands.
As if they didn't already.
As they reflect that King Ahasuerus himself ordered Queen Vashti to be brought before him, but she would not come. This very day, the ladies of Persia and Media who have heard of the queen's behavior will cite it to all your majesty's official, and there will be no end of scorn and provocation. Oh, no. If it please your majesty, let a royal edict be issued by you, and let it be written into the laws of Persia and Media, so that it cannot be abrogated, that Vashti shall never enter the presence of King Ahasuerus, and let your majesty bestow her royal state upon another who is more worthy than she. Then will the judgment executed by your majesty resound throughout your realm, vast though it is, and all wives will treat their husbands with respect, high and low alike. Yikes. So, yeah, King Ahasuerus and this advisor dude fucking suck.
Not feminist.
No, definitely not. Vashti rules. Team Vashti all the way. The proposal was approved by the king and the ministers, and the king did as Memucan proposed. Dispatches were sent to all the provinces of the king, to every province in its own script, and to every nation in its own language, that every man should wield authority in his home and speak the language of his own people. Yikes. So that's a fucking start.
Yikes.
Oof.
All right.
Lee.
I'm on chapter 2. Let's see if I can say his name right. Sometime afterward, when the anger of King Ahasuerus. Can I just call him King A?
Yeah, that's fine with me.
Okay. Subsided.
King A, King Dickbag.
He thought of Vashti and what she had done and what had been decreed against her. The king's servants who attended him said, "What beautiful young virgins we sought out for your majesty. Let your majesty appoint officers in every province of your realm to assemble all the beautiful young virgins at the fortress Shushan in the harem under the supervision of Hegi, the king's eunuch, guardian of the women. Let them be provided with their cosmetics, and let the maiden who pleases your majesty be queen instead of Vashti."
Oh, God, it's so creepy.
I know.
Oh, God, I hate it so much.
I just seen that that one eunuch from Game of Thrones. The bald one?
Yeah, the spider, or what's his nickname?
Yeah. In the fortress Shushan lived a Jew by the name of Mordecai, son of... what?
Oh, no, that was a good air horn. My man Morty.
Son of... Oh, God, I just thought of Rick and Morty. Son of Jair, son of Shimi, son of Kish, a Benjaminite. Kish had been exiled from Jerusalem in the group that was carried into exile along with King Jeconiah of Judah, which had been driven into exile by King Nebuchadnezzar of Babylon. He was foster father to Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had neither father nor mother. The maiden was shapely and beautiful, and when her mother and father died, Mordecai adopted her as his own daughter. Are you going to air horn every time I say Mordecai?
No, I just wanted to shout out his intro. Mordecai's great.
Okay. When the king's order and edict was proclaimed, and when many girls were assembled in the fortress Shushan under the supervision of Hegi, Esther, too, was taken into the king's palace under the supervision of Hegi, guardian of the women.
Okay, wait. This is definitely something I forgot from the story when we talked about it, that, like, none of this was consensual. Like, they fucking, like, kidnapped young girls. They fucking stole.
Gross.
Yikes.
So I've been listening to TruAnon, and all they do is talk about, it's all about Jeffrey Epstein, and I'm, like, getting some Jeffrey Epstein.
Oh, no.
Bye.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Right? Like, who's Esther? Do you know how old she was?
No, but given the obsessive focus on the words virgin and maiden, I'm guessing entirely too young.
Okay, so like Jeffrey Epstein age.
Yeah. Okay. Yikes.
That's gross.
Yep.
real
Pizzagate hours.
Oh, God. Okay. The girl pleased him and won his favor, and he hastened to furnish her with her cosmetics and her rations, as well as with the 7 maids who were her due from the king's palace. And he treated her and her maids with special kindness in the harem. Esther did not reveal her people or her kindred, for Mordecai had told her not to reveal it. Every single day, Mordecai would walk about in front of the court of the harem to learn how Esther was faring and what was happening to her. When each girl's turn came to go to King A at the end of the 12 months treatment prescribed for women, for that was the period spent on beautifying them, 6 months with oil of myrrh and 6 months with perfumes and women's cosmetics, and it was after that the girl would go to the king. Whatever she asked for would be given her to take with her from the harem to the king's palace. She would go in the evening and leave in the morning for a second harem in charge of Shashgaz, the king's eunuch, guardian of the concubines. She would not go again to the king unless the king wanted her, when she would be summoned by name.
Jesus, this sounds awful.
Yeah. When the turn came for Esther, daughter of Abihail, the uncle of Mordecai, who had adopted her as his own daughter, to go to the king, she did not ask for anything but what Haggai, the king's eunuch, guardian of the women, advised. Yet Esther won the admiration of all who saw her. Esther was taken to King A in his royal palace in the 10th month, which is the month of Tebeth, in the 7th year of his reign. The king loved Esther more than all the other women, and she won his grace and favor more than all the virgins. So he set a royal diadem on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Do we know what happened to Vashti?
I'm sure there's a midrash on it. Everything that's like, I literally don't know how much of the story that I think I know is from real text and how much is just from like fun retellings. But every version I've heard was she was like, fine, fuck off. You're going to exile me. You can't exile me. I quit.
She's sort of like Lilith in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a parallel. Which, hell yeah. Oh, wow. I never thought of that. That's fucking sick.
Love it. Okay. The king gave a great banquet for all his officials and courtiers, the banquet of Esther. He proclaimed a remission of taxes for the provinces and distributed gifts as befits a king. When the virgins were assembled a second time, Mordecai sat in the palace gate. But Esther still did not reveal her kindred or her people, as Mordecai had instructed her, for Esther obeyed Mordecai's bidding, as she had done when she was under his tutelage. At that time, when Mordecai was sitting in the palace gate, Bigthan and Teresh, two of the king's...
These names are great.
Two of the king's eunuchs, who guarded the threshold, became angry and plotted to do away with King A. Mordecai learned of it and told it to Queen Esther, and Esther reported it to the king in Mordecai's name. The matter was investigated and found to be so, and the two were impaled on stakes. Woo! Whoop, whoop. Although that was a monarch who did that, so maybe not.
Yeah.
We don't know the political ideology of these two eunuchs. So
yeah, to be honest, I mean, Bigthan and Teresh might be comrades for all we know. So yeah. So I guess sad.
This was recorded in the Book of Annals at the instance of the king.
The Book of Annals.
I did not want to say that.
You done fucked up, Bigthan. Got caught and got staked.
This is why you don't talk about plans in public.
Seriously. That's the takeaway.
We can all learn OPSEC rules from Bigthan.
All right, chapter 3. Whew. Oh, here we go. Sometime afterwards, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, son of Hammedatha the Agagite. He advanced him and seated him higher than any of his fellow officials. All the king's courtiers in the palace gate knelt and bowed low to Haman, for such was the king's order concerning him. But Mordecai would not kneel or bow low. Then the king's courtiers who were in the palace gate said to Mordecai, "Why do you disobey the king's order?" When they spoke to him day after day, and he would not listen to them, they told Haman, In order to see, I'm never not going to be caught off guard. It's great. I should see it coming every time, but I just don't.
Read every year.
Every time. Oh, God. I love Purim. In order to see whether Mordecai's resolve would prevail, for he had explained to them that he was a Jew. When Haman saw that Mordecai would not kneel or bow low to him, Haman was filled with rage. But he disdained to lay hands on Mordecai alone, having been told who Mordecai's people were. You don't want to fuck with Mordecai's people, apparently. Which is, I don't know, I like that they just throw that out there. Like, you just don't fuck with... I don't know.
Yeah,
Mordecai's it's assumed. Yeah, it's assumed that there's going to be like serious Jewish retaliation to killing one Jew, and then none to plotting to kill all of. I don't know. Whatever. No logic to the story. So, having been told who Mordecai's people were, plotted to do away with all the Jews, Mordecai's people, throughout the kingdom of Ahasuerus. In the first month, that is the month of Nisan, in the 12th year of King Ahasuerus, Pur, which means the lot, was cast before concerning every day and every month until it fell on the 12th month, that is the month of Adar. Then said to King Ahasuerus, oh shoot, I should do a shitty voice for Haman. He hasn't spoken yet. Yes. So yeah. Said to King Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered and dispersed among the other peoples in all the provinces of your realm, whose laws are different from those of any other people, and who do not obey the king's laws. It is not in your majesty's interest to tolerate them. If it please your majesty, let an edict be drawn for their destruction, and I will pay 10,000 talents of silver to the stewards for deposit in the royal treasury. Thereupon the king removed his signet ring from his hand and gave it to son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the foe of the Jews. And the king said, the money and the people are yours to do with as you see fit. On the 13th day of the first month, the king's scribes were summoned and a decree was issued, as Haman directed to the king's satraps, to the governors of every province, and to the officials of every people, to every province in its own script, and to every people in its own language. The orders were issued in the name of King Ahasuerus and sealed with the king's signet. Accordingly, written instructions were dispatched by couriers to all the king's provinces to destroy, massacre, and exterminate all the Jews, young and old, children and women, on a single day, on the 13th day of the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, and to plunder their possessions. Yikes. Fuck.
Yeah.
That got sad fast. The text of the document was to the effect that a law should be proclaimed in every single province. It was to be publicly displayed to all the peoples so that they might be ready for that day. The couriers went out post haste on the royal mission, and the decree was proclaimed in the fortress Shushan. The king and Haman sat down to feast. but the city of Shushan was dumbfounded, which I think that line caught me the first time I was reading this through, that like the city was fucked up about this.
Yeah.
They like weren't down. It was like, what the fuck? No, that's our neighbors.
Yeah. Chapter 4. When Mordecai learned all that had happened, Mordecai tore his clothes and put on sackcloth and ashes. He went through the city, crying out loudly and bitterly, until he came in front of the palace gate, for one could not enter the palace gate wearing sackcloth.
Makes sense. Can't be going in looking shabby.
Yeah. Also, in every province that the king's commanded decree reached, there was great mourning among the Jews, with fasting, weeping, and wailing, and everybody lay in sackcloth and ashes. When Esther's maidens and eunuchs came and informed her, the queen was greatly agitated. She sent clothing for Mordecai to wear, so that he might take off his sackcloth, but he refused. Thereupon, Esther summoned Hathach, one of the eunuchs whom the king had appointed to serve her, and sent him to Mordecai to learn the why and wherefore of it all. Hathach went out to Mordecai in the city square in front of the palace gate, and Mordecai told him all that had happened to him and all about the money that had offered to pay into the royal treasury for the destruction of the Jews. He also gave him the written text of the law that had been proclaimed to Shushan for their destruction. He bade him show it to Esther and inform her and charge her to go to the king and to appeal to him and to plead with him for her people. When Hathach came and delivered Mordecai's message to Esther told Hathach to take back to Mordecai the following reply. All the king's courtiers and all and the people of the king's provinces know that if any person, man or woman, enters the king's presence in the inner court without having been summoned, there is but one law for him, that he be put to death. Only if the king extends the golden scepter to him may he live. Now I have not been summoned to visit the king for the last 30 days. That blows.
Yeah, what the fuck? That's not...
They're married, and this dude supposedly...
Oh, I'm so in love with you.
And then, like, I'm not going to even do anything with you for 30 days?
Yeah, what? that's fucking neglect. That's fucked up.
Yeah. Mordecai was told what Esther had said. Mordecai had this message delivered to Esther. Do not imagine that you, of all the Jews, will escape with your life by being in the king's palace. On the contrary, if you keep silence in this crisis, relief and deliverance will come to the Jews from another quarter, while you and your father's house will perish. And who knows, perhaps you have attained to royal position for just such a crisis. Then Esther sent back this answer to Mordecai. Go, assemble all the Jews who live in Shushan and fast on my behalf. Do not eat or drink for 3 days, night or day. I and my maidens will observe the same fast. Then I shall go to the king, though it is contrary to the law. And if I am to perish, I shall perish. So Mordecai went about the city and did just as Esther had commanded him.
Hell yeah.
What a... queen. Yes, queen.
Esther got that chutzpah.
Yeah. Serious chutzpah.
All right, chapter 5. On the third day, Esther put on royal apparel and stood in the inner court of the king's palace, facing the king's palace, while the king was sitting on his royal throne in the throne room, facing the entrance of the palace. Gee, thanks. I needed that detail. As soon as the king saw Queen Esther standing in the court, she won his favor. The king extended to Esther the golden scepter, which he had in his hand, and Esther approached and touched the tip of the scepter. That's definitely not an innuendo.
I was going to say the same.
Yep.
Phrasing. I mean, it had been 30 days.
Yeah,
she's
right?
Like, come on.
What troubles you, Queen Esther? The king asked her. And what is your request? Even to half the kingdom, it shall be granted you. If it please your majesty, Esther replied, let your majesty and Haman come today to the feast that I have prepared for him. The king commanded, tell Haman to hurry and do Esther's bidding. So the king and came to the feast that Esther had prepared. At the wine feast, a wine feast.
That's all there is.
That's a good feast. The king asked Esther, what is your wish? It shall be granted you. And what is your request? Even to half the kingdom, it shall be fulfilled. My wish, replied Esther, my request... If your majesty will do me the favor, if it please your majesty to grant my wish and accede to my request, let your majesty and come to the feast, which I will prepare for them. And tomorrow I will do your majesty's bidding. That day, went out happy and lighthearted. But when saw Mordecai in the palace gate, and Mordecai did not rise or even stir on his account, was filled with rage at him. This is a real H-Man heavy chapter.
H-Man heavy.
H-Man, fuck you, buddy. Nevertheless, controlled himself and went home. He sent for his friends and his wife Zeresh, and told them about his great wealth and his many sons, and all about how the king had promoted him and advanced him above the officials and the king's courtiers. What is more, said Haman.
I wasn't expecting that.
Queen Esther gave me a feast, and besides the king, she did not have anyone but me. And tomorrow, too, I am invited by her along with the king. Yet all this means nothing to me every time I see that Jew Mordecai sitting in the palace gate.
Christ.
Then his wife Zeresh and all his friends said to him, let a stake be put up 50 cubits high. Holy shit. That's a big ass fucking stake.
That we did. I was talking about how that like fucking illustration stuck with me. Cause that fucking, Scaffold was like yeah. so fucking sick. I'm like, that's and like, supposed to
and like obviously person? for like Ashkenazi Jews, the stake would have been transferred to a gallows in the retellings that became popular, because like I never remember it being impaling on stakes. I always remember it being hanging at a gallows.
Maybe it's like the translation.
I mean, I think that probably this is closer to the translation, okay. like closer to accuracy, and just like the story.
Steak,
huh?
That's a big steak.
It's a big ass steak. It also would require me to change up the game. Staking, it doesn't have the same ring to it.
Staking with Haman?
Yeah, it doesn't. I'm gonna stick with hanging with Haman. my greatest triumph, to be honest.
I attended the battle bat last weekend at wrestling, and I thought it was beautiful.
Hell yeah! All right. Let a stake be put up. Oh God, this is another one. They blame it on the wife.
Oh,
they're
yeah.
They're doing the blame dodgy thing where it's somebody else's idea again. Literally, they did with what's his name with the king banishing Vashti. Then his wife Zeresh, totally her idea, and all his friends, definitely their idea, not his idea. Let a stake be put up 50 cubits high, and in the morning, ask the king to have Mordecai impaled on it. Then you can go gaily with the king to the feast. The proposal pleased Haman.
You son of a bitch.
And he had the stake put up.
Dudes, take responsibility for your actions.
Yeah, fuck don't off.
Don't blame other people. Jesus Christ.
Bullshit.
Don't be like Haman.
Mm-mm. Fuck him. You suck, buddy.
Chapter 6. That night, sleep deserted the king, and he ordered the book of records that annals. God damn it.
Oh, I teach middle school because I'm really just a big ass 12-year-old. Like,
I have no excuse other than the maturity level of a 13-year-old boy. Ugh. And it was read to the king. There it was found written that Mordecai had denounced Bigthana and Teresh. Two of the king's eunuchs who guarded the threshold, who had plotted to do away with King A. What honor or advancement has been conferred on Mordecai for this? The king inquired. Nothing at all has been done for him, replied the king's servants, who were in attendance on him.
Bunch of dicks.
Who is in the court? The king asked. For him.
Fuck you.
Just entered the outer court of the royal palace to speak to the king about having Mordecai impaled on the stake he had prepared for him. It is him sitting in the court. The king's servants answered him. Let him enter, said the king. Entered, and the king asked him, what should be done for a man whom the king desires to honor? Said to himself, whom would the king desire to honor more than me?
Everyone, dickbag.
So the king, for the man whom the king desires to honor, let royal garb which the king has worn be brought, and a horse on which the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal diadem has been set, and let the attire and the horse be put in the charge of one of the king's noble courtiers, and let the man whom the king desires to honor be attired and paraded on the horse through the city square, while they proclaim before him, this is what is done for the man whom the king desires to honor.
Oh, here it is.
I was thinking about this all weekend.
This is my favorite part.
Because it's like a Curb Your Enthusiasm.
It's so good.
Quick then, said the king to Haman. Get the garb and the horse, as you have said, and do this to Mordecai the Jew, who sits in the king's gate. Omit nothing of all you have proposed.
Yeah. Fuck you.
The garb and the horse, and arrayed Mordecai and paraded him through the city square, and he proclaimed before him, this is what is done for the man whom the king desires to honor.
Yee.
I returned to the king's gate while he...
Boo.
Home, his head covered in mourning. There, wife Zeresh and all his friends, everything that had befallen him. His advisors and his wife Zeresh said to him, "If Mordecai, before whom you have begun to fall, is of Jewish stock, you will not overcome him. You will fall before him to your ruin."
Goddamn right.
While they were still speaking to him, the king's eunuchs arrived and hurriedly brought which Esther had prepared.
All right. Oh, God, I fucking love that.
If we're able to play the Curb Your Enthusiasm theme, that would be
excellent. All right, chapter 7. So the king and came to feast with Queen Esther. On the second day, the king again asked Esther at the wine feast, which, okay, he's probably drunk, so, "What is your wish, Queen Esther? It shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even to have the kingdom, it shall be fulfilled." Queen Esther replied, "If your majesty will do me the favor, and if it pleases your majesty, let my life be granted me as my wish, and my people as my request. For we have been sold, my people and I, to be destroyed, massacred, and exterminated. Had we only been sold as bondmen and bondwomen, I would have kept silent, for the adversary is not worthy of the king's trouble." Thereupon King Ahasuerus demanded of Queen Esther, "Who is he, and where is he who dared to do this?" "The adversary and enemy," replied Esther, "is this evil
Douche.
And Haman cringed in terror before the king and queen. The king, in his fury, left the wine feast for the palace garden, while remained to plead with Queen Esther for his life, for he saw that the king had resolved to destroy him. When the king returned from the palace garden to the banquet room, lying prostrate on the couch on which Esther reclined. Oh, I forgot about this bit. Yeah, so it was lying prostrate on the couch on which Esther reclined.
What does that mean?
So he was laying not quite on top of Esther, but like face down, like spread out.
Yeah. Okay, got it.
So then King A thinks to himself, "Does he mean," cried the king, "to ravish the queen in my own palace?" No sooner did these words leave the king's lips than face was covered. Then Harbona, one of the eunuchs in attendance on the king, said, "What is more, a stake is standing at Haman's house, 50 cubits high, which Haman made for Mordecai, the man whose words saved the king. Impale him on it," the king ordered.
Yeah, right.
So they impaled Haman on the stake, which he had put up for Mordecai.
I bet the whoop whoop is for him being impaled, not for Haman.
And the king's fury abated. Yay!
Yay!
Just, hanging with Haman. I love that it's at his house, too. What a fucking asshole. Like, this dude puts up this giant-ass steak in his front yard.
Dumbass. Chapter 8. That very day, King A gave the property of Haman. The enemy of the Jews to Queen Esther. Mordecai presented himself to the king, for Esther had revealed how he was related to her. The king slipped off his ring, which he had taken back from Haman, gave it to Mordecai, and Esther put Mordecai in charge of Haman's property. Esther spoke to the king again, falling at his feet and weeping, and beseeching him to avert the evil plotted by Haman.
You're dead, you fuck!
Against the Jews. The king extended the golden scepter to Esther, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, and Esther arose and stood before the king. "If it please your majesty," she said, "and if I have won your favor and the proposal seems right to your majesty, and if I am pleasing to you, let dispatches be written countermanding those which were written by son of Hammedatha the Agagite, embodying his plot to annihilate the Jews throughout the king's provinces. For how can I bear to see the disaster which will befall my people, and how can I bear to see the destruction of my kindred?" Then King A said to Queen Esther and Mordecai the Jew, "I have given
his
property to Esther, and he has been impaled on the stake for scheming against the Jews."
Yeah.
And you may further write with regard to the Jews as you see fit. Write it in the king's name and seal it with the king's signet. For an edict that has been written in the king's name and sealed with the king's signet may not be revoked. So the king's scribes were summoned at that time on the 23rd day of the third month, that is, the month of Sivan, and letters were written at Mordecai's dictation to the Jews and to the satraps, the governors, and the officials of the 127 provinces from India to Ethiopia, to every province in its own script, and to every people in its own language, and to the Jews in their own script and language.
Nice.
He had them written in the name of King A and sealed with the king's signet. Letters were dispatched by mounted couriers, riding steeds used in the king's service, bred of the royal stud. To this effect, the king has permitted the Jews of every city to assemble and fight for their lives. If any people or province attacks them, they may destroy, massacre, and exterminate its armed force together with women and children and plunder their possessions.
Oh, that part's not went. That's,
Yeah, on a single day in all the provinces of King A, namely on the 13th day of the 12th month, that is the month of Adar. The text of the document was to be issued as a law in every single province. It was to be publicly displayed to all the people so that the Jews should be ready for that day to avenge themselves on their enemies. The couriers mounted on royal steeds went out in urgent haste at the king's command, and the decree was proclaimed in the fortress Shushan. Mordecai left the king's presence in royal robes of blue and white, with a magnificent crown of gold and a mantle of fine linen and purple wool. And the city of Shushan rang with joyous cries. The Jews enjoyed light and gladness, happiness and honor. And in every province and in every city, when the king's command and decree arrived, there was gladness and joy among the Jews, a feast and a holiday. And many of the people of the land professed to be Jews, for the fear of the Jews had fallen upon them.
Do not fuck with us.
Right.
But also, history teacher note that the death and destruction upon literally everything threat was a standard in the Near East. And not necessarily to be taken literally. Otherwise, Babylon would have been depopulated 1,000 times over. It's a literary convention that wasn't necessarily supposed to be taken seriously. And actually, in the next chapter, the way the text says it, there is specific mention of only killing the armed forces, not civilians. So, caveat so we can still fully enjoy the bloody vengeance. So here we go. Chapter 9. And so on the 13th day of the 12th month, that is the month of Adar, when the king's command and decree were to be executed, the very day on which the enemies of the Jews had expected to get them in their power, the opposite happened, and the Jews got their enemies in their power. Throughout the provinces of King Ahasuerus, the Jews mustered in their cities to attack those who sought their hurt, and no one could withstand them, for the fear of them had fallen upon all the peoples. Indeed, all the officials of the provinces, the satraps, the governors, and the king's steward showed deference to the Jews because the fear of Mordecai had fallen upon them.
I want to know about Mordecai's big dick energy.
Right? Fucking Mordecai, man.
Damn. Oh, my God.
For Mordecai was now powerful in the royal palace, and his fame was spreading throughout all the provinces. The man Mordecai was growing ever more powerful. So the Jews struck at their enemies with the sword, slaying and destroying. They wreaked their will upon the enemies. In the fortress Shushan, the Jews killed a total of 500 men. They also killed Parshandatha, Dalphon, Aspatha, Poratha, Adalia, Aridatha, Parmashta, Arisai, Aridai, and Vizatha, the 10 sons of son of Hamadatha, the foe of the Jews. But they did not lay hands on the spoils, because it wasn't about
dirty.
And we're not it wasn't about Jews being greedy. We just wanted blood vengeance. Come on.
Mm-hmm. Just a little blood vengeance
as a treat. When the number of those slain in the fortress Shushan was reported on that same day to the king said to Queen Esther, "In the fortress Shushan alone, the Jews have killed a total of 500 men, as well as the 10 sons of Haman."
No!
"What then must they have done in the provinces of the realm? What is your wish now? It shall be granted you. And what else is your request? It shall be fulfilled." "If it please your majesty," Esther replied, "let the Jews in Shushan be permitted to act tomorrow also as they did today."
Yeah.
"And let
No!
10 sons be impaled on the stake."
That's right.
The king ordered that this should be done, and the decree was proclaimed in Shushan. 10 sons were impaled. And the Jews in Shushan mustered again on the 14th day of Adar and slew 300 men in Shushan. But they did not lay hands on the spoil.
More blood vengeance!
The rest of the Jews, those in the king's provinces, likewise mustered and fought for their lives. They disposed of their enemies, killing 75,000 of their foes. Holy shit.
Oh, yeah. That's some big dick energy, too.
But they did not lay hands on the spoil.
That's right.
That was on the 13th day of the month of Adar. That's my birthday. Sick. That's so cool. And they rested on the 14th day and made it a day of feasting and merrymaking. But the Jews in Shushan mustered on both the 13th and 14th days, and so rested on the 15th and made it a day of feasting and merrymaking. This is why village Jews who live in unwalled towns observe the 14th day of the month of Adar and make it a day of merrymaking and feasting, and as a holiday and an occasion for sending gifts to one another, which we should bring back. We should bring back the Purim gift giving. Mordecai recorded these events, and he sent dispatches to all the Jews throughout the provinces of King Ahasuerus, near and far, charging them to observe the 14th and 15th days of Adar every year, the same days on which the Jews enjoyed relief from their foes, and the same month which had been transformed for them from one of grief and mourning to one of festive joy. They were to observe them as days of feasting and merrymaking, and as an occasion for sending gifts to one another and presents to the poor. Which, God damn it, it's the best holiday.
Bring it back.
I fucking love Purim.
Yeah.
The Jews accordingly assumed as an obligation that which they had begun to practice and which Mordecai prescribed for them. For son of Hammedatha the Agagite, the foe of all the Jews, had plotted to destroy the Jews and had cast Pur, that is, the lot, with intent to crush and exterminate them. But when Esther came before the king, he commanded, "With the promulgation of this decree, let the evil plot which he devised against the Jews recoil on his own head." So they impaled him and his sons on the stake. For that reason, these days were named Purim after Pur. In view, then, of all the instructions in the said letter and of what they had experienced in that matter and what had befallen them, the Jews undertook and irrevocably obligated themselves and their descendants and all who might join them to observe these 2 days in the manner prescribed and at the proper time each year. Consequently, these days are recalled and observed in every generation, by every family, every province, and every city. And these days of Purim shall never cease among the Jews, and the memory of them shall never perish among their descendants. Then Queen Esther, daughter of Abihail, wrote a second letter of Purim for the purpose of confirming with full authority the aforementioned one of Mordecai the Jew. Dispatches were sent to all the Jews in the 127 provinces of the realm of Ahasuerus with an ordinance of equity and honesty. These days of Purim shall be observed at their proper time as Mordecai the Jew and now Queen Esther has obligated them to do, and just as they have assumed for themselves and their descendants the obligations of the fast with their lamentations. And Esther's ordinance validating these observances of Purim was recorded in a scroll. Woo! Woo-hoo. Fucking Purim!
Yeah! Chapter 10! This is a short one.
Yeah.
King A imposed tribute on the mainland and the islands. All his mighty and powerful acts and a full account of the greatness to which the king advanced Mordecai are recorded in the annals, God damn it, of the kings of Media and Persia.
God, I wish that still existed. Fuck. Why?
For Mordecai the Jew ranked next to King A and was highly regarded by the Jews and popular with the multitude of his brethren. He sought the good of his people and interceded for the welfare of all his kindred. Like, Esther really put her life on the line. Like, let's be real. She's the true hero of
God
the
story. Right. Esther's the shit.
Yeah, she is.
Oh, man. I fucking...
So that's spiel.
Yeah, that's it. I definitely had the dates wrong, like what the dates of the holiday represented. I thought that the 13th of Adar was like the last day of Esther's fast, and the 14th was the day she like came out to the king. I kind of love that those 2 days are the days of vengeance.
Hell yeah.
Oh, it's so wild. Just the wackiest. Oh, God, it's great. So yeah,
I love it.
So
I wish we had this kind of stuff like... I don't know. I wish we had a holiday like this for like the ghetto uprising, like the Warsaw ghetto uprising or Nakam or something like that, where we celebrate like us actually like not being victims.
Yeah. Jewish Resistance Day.
Yeah. Oh, we got to do
Let's
it.
Let's do it.
We got to just come we'll up with a day.
Yeah. Well, we'll just pick one.
But we got to do an episode on a com so people know what we're talking Hell about. Yes.
Oh, my problematic faves. I love you so much, Nakam.
They goofed on some stuff, but that's okay.
They goofed on some stuff. They allowed Zionists to be in the group, you know, but we'll get there, y'all.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's the Purim story. If you liked this kind of odd episode, let us know. If you didn't like it, I guess also let us know. But I had a good time. I don't know.
I had a good time too.
Yeah. And maybe we'll do more kind of textual readings. That could be kind of an interesting way to build out the Minyan as we go forward. And for people that really want to get into the text, definitely join us for the weekly lowercase m minyan services. We got to come up with a name for that shit.
It feels weird to call it services, but
it's
whatever.
Services. It's lay-led services, I guess. Our revolutionary chavura.
That's good.
It's our our little lay-led gaggle of dinguses getting together and just kind of putzing our way through the parsha every week. But it's great. But yeah, so that's every Sunday at
8 Central.
Every 8 Sunday.
8 a.m. Central.
Yeah. Yeah, 8 a.m. Central time. It's in the Discord, which is, if you're listening to this, you are a patron, so you wouldn't care that it's not just for patrons, but it's not just for patrons. So if you have a friend, then let them know. And yeah, if you have any other ideas for patrons bonus content, this is our first non-dad, and we do love dads, but we're trying to think of.
I do love my dad.
Me too. My old man's great.
And Daddy Stalin.
We just passed his yard site.
I know.
Feel like pure shit. Just want him back.
Yeah.
Love you. But yeah, if you have ideas for new content for bonus stuff, let us know. Be in touch. All the usual spots. And thank you so much for your contributions. Actually, we do have some new shit for y'all coming down the pipeline. Some of you who just like out of the making me verklempt generosity of your heart signed up at a higher patron rate than our actual tier and are like,
what?
Yeah, we have some people that are given like $5 a month when we just asked for like $1.80. So y'all will be grandfathered into this, but we're going to set up a new tier with some new stuff within the next month or so. So keep an eye out for that. We'll probably be debuting it in the next month's bonus episode, I guess. And yeah, that's all for now. Chag Purim Sameach, and solidarity.
Solidarity. Bye. I love you all. Bye.